Welcome, listeners of Film Club. Welcome to, obviously, Film Club, episode 11. I am, of course, Mel Forster, joined, as always, by my wonderful co-pilot, Mr. Dan Seraph. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, thank you. Just suffering through a bit of a cold, so excuse the nasal podcast this week.
Oh, well, hopefully that does not come to fruition, particularly when we're talking about this particular film, which, of course, this week was your choice from our last episode, Breaking the Waves, a 1996 film from Mr. Lars von Trier. Now, obviously, as we say each episode, if you haven't seen the film yet, you definitely want to pause it because it will be heavily spoilerific, as well as some other things. No doubt. But before we get into it, I'm going to pass it over to you, sir, to introduce the film, seeing as it was your pick. And I'm going to sit here limbering up like a metaphysical shot put thrower, ready to hurl my opinions as far as I can.
Oh, God. I feel kind of bad because I know that you didn't like this. But that's part of the reason why I chose Breaking the Waves for this week's film club. Not to put you through some kind of sadistic suffering. But this is a film that I knew would divide people. Mm-hmm. And we've had some really popular choices over the last couple of weeks in Film Club. We've had Unforgiven, we've had Alien, we've had Requiem for a Dream and Seven Samurai. And these are films that have been mostly very much loved by us and our listeners. And one of the great things about film is that it is something that you can debate, be it the writing, the actual filmmaking, the acting. These are all things that you can discuss and analyze, and people are not going to have the same opinion as everybody else. And so I wanted to choose a film this week that would really split hairs and kind of put people on very bipolar sides. And I couldn't think of a better example of that than Breaking the Waves, because on one hand, I think this is a film that has a lot of very strong elements to it. I don't know if you'll necessarily agree with that, but there is a flip side to that, in that there are many elements of this film that I find very uncomfortable and misogynistic and kind of hateful. So, yeah, this is my attempt to kind of create a bit of debate on Film Club, and I hope that it's probably worked. What did you think of the film, Mel?
Oh, oh boy. Here's the thing. I'll give you a sort of running timeline of how I perceived the film first. It's kind of like a broad stroke, and then I'll kind of get in with some more finer details with a bit more finesse. But I'll give you a general sort of breakdown. Okay, so you start off, the film, obviously, for those still listening, you've obviously seen it, but would just kind of give you a quick catch-up. It's about a sort of skittish Scottish woman, played by Emily Watson, called Bess, or Bessa, who finds herself marrying what the locals deem an outsider, an oil man who works, obviously, on the oil rigs, called Jan. Played by a young Stellan Skarsgård, who looks a little bit like a young Val Kilmer crossed with Gary Oldman from Leon, strangely enough. So they get married, and, you know, for the first, for the first part of the film, they enjoy kind of wedded bliss, until Jan obviously has to go out to sea to work on the oil rigs. And the first half hour, I thought, is pretty decent. I mean, it's a little weird, because it's the way it's filmed, and I'll get into that. That's the dogma way of filming, and I'll kind of get into that in a little bit. But the first half hour, I'm okay with. I'm still with it. I'm still with the film. I'm thinking, it's pretty good. It's pretty interesting. I have a general outline of, I know what's going to happen, and so I'm still kind of perceiving how it's going to get to that point and what have you. But in the meantime, I'm still going with it. So the first half hour, things are going pretty decent. And then, well, I say that, but then I found that the sex scenes in the initial, like, first half hour, 45 minutes, are really weird. For some reason, to me, they come across as really icky and really kind of cold and weird. In a similar way that Francis Ford Coppola can't really direct fight scenes, I think Von Trier has an issue directing sex scenes because they just feel kind of icky and they make your skin crawl. And I don't know what it is about it. I think it's just the way it's filmed. I think it's the position of the people, the way that the camera's just literally right up in the faces at one point, and just the general reactions. I just found it a little bit kind of icky to watch. I mean, the first sex scene is in a pub toilet after the wedding reception, which I thought was a little weird. It's not the first thing, nor the last thing I found a little bit weird about the film, but yeah, so I kind of thought that their relationship was interesting. They obviously don't know a lot about each other, but you know, I'm kind of thinking that perhaps we're going to get to know a little bit more about each other as they do. And so, first half hour, I'm good, and things are going okay. Except for a few maybe raised eyebrows here and there concerning the sort of icky sex scenes. And then Jan goes off and he goes drilling and what have you, and we're left with Besser, who all of a sudden starts talking to God, but not just talking to him, she starts playing the part of God as well, which is very strange. So she'll be like, "Oh God, will you look after Jan and make sure he's all right?" And then she'll do God's voice. She'll be like, "Oh, yes, Besser, I will. He'll be fine. Stop bothering me. Oh, I'm sorry, Father. I'll go and clean the rest of the church now." So that's a little bit weird. But I'm still kind of, I'm like, okay, that's an interesting sort of character to niche, I guess. And then she kind of just starts getting a little bit annoying because then she just starts having hissy fits. She starts acting really weird. The fits turn into tantrums. The tantrums turn into literally screaming at the ocean from rocks. And this goes on for a bit, and I'm like, this is kind of becoming a little bit irksome. I'm really kind of falling out of interest with this character, and she's becoming a little bit annoying. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because then Jan obviously goes out to sea, does his work, something happens, has an accident, finds himself paralyzed, as you do, comes back, and she's all morbid and she's all weird and she's still a little bit crazy and she's doing more talking to God, both her, and she's like, "Oh God, when will he be able to walk again?" And she's like, oh, God's like, "Oh, I don't know." And she's questioning, and then there's sections of doubt, and then the film hits its weird point. Which I knew was coming. Like I said, I kind of had an outline of how the film was going, and I knew that this was coming, so I was expecting it. But even though I was expecting it, no matter how much I can prepare myself for it, it doesn't stop it from being very strange and very icky and very kind of unrealistic. And this is the sense that Jan wants Bess to carry on her life. Well, it's not so much he wants her to carry on her life. He wants to carry on his life vicariously through her, so he does some major head fucking and guilt tripping by saying, "If I don't have love, I'm gonna die. If you don't give me love, I'm gonna die. So the way you can give me love is go out and sleep with other men and then come and tell me all about it." And then from here, it just begins to peel away rapidly. And I can tell you the exact moment where I went from, "Oh, this is a bit too. Oh my God, he's done it again. He's just doing provocative things to be provocative, and I hate it." There's a scene which, obviously, if you've watched the film, you'll have seen this particular scene, in which Bess is sat on the bus and
I knew it would be this scene, by the way.
begins
I knew you were going to
molesting an
say
old
this.
man. And I'm just kind of, at first, I've got rabbit in the headlights, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And then I realise, and then I start almost audibly screaming at my screen, going, no, this has no point. This is weird, and it's odd, and it's awkward, and it's provocative because you want to do something provocative. This has no bearing on the character. This is so unrealistic and so weird, and it's horrible, and I hate it. And you've done it again, and you've gone from being mildly weird and awkward and obtuse and kind of creepy and icky to just plain tyrannosaural dickhead director. And then the film obviously goes on and continues, and she starts dressing like a prostitute, and she starts having these weird encounters. There's a strange admission from the doctor that he loves her in what I thought was a very sort of cheap, cheesy soap opera thing. I was like, oh, come on, doctor, you don't love her, she's fucking crazy, look at what she's doing. And then the plot becomes just, it just literally starts eating away at itself like some kind of hungry, self-loathing cannibal who just wants to eat all of its flesh off its bones. And there is a pivotal scene, so the bus scene kind of got me irate, but the one scene in which I think really broke my brain and I had to really struggle to reach the end credits with she, Bessa, has raised suspicions and has got people concerned. The doctor who loves her, of course, is concerned, and he fills out this form to have her committed, but he needs Jan's signature. So after Jan's been a total douche and made her do all these sick, weird things for his own pleasure, he then signs a form saying, "Yeah, I want nothing to do with her anymore. The mental house can have her." So that's a little bit right. That makes no sense. Why are you doing that? You're a horrible, horrible person, and I really don't like the mean-spirited nature of this film anymore. To the point where she is to be sectioned, she escapes and she wants to carry on doing the sex with the other men to make her crazy, crazy husband happy. So she dresses like a prostitute and goes out on like a little fishing boat to one of the big oil ships, in which she is attacked, she's nearly raped, she's nearly beaten. She manages to escape, she gets away. Obviously, if you've seen the film, you know what I'm talking about, but as I said, I'm just kind of giving you a broad sort of prospect of my viewing here. So she manages to get back, and then she realizes that the only way that she can get to see Jan is if she goes to hospital. Well, she can't just walk into hospital because they're obviously going to grab her, seize her, section her, she won't get to see him. So the only way that she can get into hospital is to have her herself hospitalized. So the most accessible way to do that is what we presume to be raped and then beaten to ultimately death. And at that point, I just completely lost it with the film, and I was like, no. Dogma filmmaking, dog shit filmmaking. This, just storytelling wise, this is crazy, it's nonsensical, it's over the top, it's just redundant, and I want this film to end. Please, let's end. But we've still got 30 minutes left. Help me, Jesus. So that's my broad sort of reflection of Breaking the Waves. Yeah.
So, in a nutshell, you enjoyed it then?
Oh, I loved it. I'll say this as a compliment, as a sort of backhanded compliment. Granted, it's not the worst Von Trier film I've seen. I have actually, The Idiots still ranks as the worst Von Trier film and the worst film I've ever seen. But this is not his worst, surprisingly.
Okay. That's a compliment, I guess.
Yeah, it is a backhanded compliment, but it's a compliment that he should treasure from me. I had many problems, and I mean, I've just literally gone over a broad scale of them, and I'll kind of get into them as we go on. But how did you find the film?
Okay, I actually agree with a lot of what you've just said, to be honest with you. And a lot of the things that you've just touched on are the reasons why I can't fall in love with this movie. As much as I'd like to, because I really like the filmmaking involved in it, and I like a handful of the ideas here. But it is, I described it last week as just a really dirty film, and it makes me feel dirty when I get to the end of it. And I realize that for those of you who haven't seen the film, you'd probably be like, what does Dan mean? What the hell is he talking about here? I hope now that you've seen Breaking the Waves, you know how I what I mean when I say that now. Because there is such a kind of undertone of misogyny about the film here.
Oh, incredibly so. I found the film incredibly misogynistic and sexist. But we'll get into that in a minute. Carry on, sorry. I just.
See, the thing is, like, it starts off and I think this is kind of feminist subtext to it here. You know, Bess lives in this religious community that's really old-fashioned in its like attitudes and values to how women should behave. You know, the men are the breadwinners, and the women are expected to endure while the husbands are away. They aren't allowed to speak in church, you can't attend funerals. But I mean, on the other hand, you have like these scenes where Bess goes to like the big ship to be raped and assaulted as this sort of self-sacrifice in order to save Jan from dying. And it's also got this real misogyny to it as well. Like I can't understand what Lars von Trier is trying to do here, like one of the things I noticed this time around is that the two main roles that and like all the women in this film play are carer and prostitute. And that makes me feel really uncomfortable about it. Like you have Bess's mum and the sister who are both carers, they look after the family, they look after the husbands, they look after the daughters. And Bess falls into this category for half of the film, and then the next half of the film, she turns into this prostitute along with the girls who go to the boats. And I feel so uncomfortable with a lot of what Lars von Trier is saying with this film. I can't quite figure out what it is. Like, I don't know if he's trying to make a feminist film, but he's just that much of a raging misogynist that it screws it up. Or if he's just trying to provoke, or I have no idea what that's about.
I see what you mean because at one hand you do kind of initially, and this is what I mean. I initially was with the film. I kind of found it interesting to begin with because you do have this sort of very meek and mild and very naive. I mean, she is a naive character. There's no getting around that. But you can only use naive as a device or as an excuse to certain points. When you reach going out on a trawler to be a dirty prostitute and get yourself raped and like literally killed, you can't really say, "Oh, well, she was always a bit naive." Yeah, so is everybody at one point in their life. No one's going to get murdered by trawlers. But she
But
starts off as this meek, mild person, and she kind of goes against the grain of the local sort of expectations because she marries an outsider. And I kind of found that kind of interesting. It's almost like very subtle, simple rule breaking in a very understated manner, and I kind of like that about it. But then it just kind of implodes on itself, and you're then presented with two female characters in the whole film, two archetypes, if you were. The women who shut up, do what they're told, obey the men's rules, are carers, but they're also really buttoned up. You don't get any emotional responses from them, except maybe from her sister, but then that's just because she's sort of bashing against the other archetype, which is if you don't do that and you can't accept not having a man in your life and you don't all sort of become super uber suppressed, you go batshit crazy. So it's either become totally cold with no heart or just absolutely stark raving mad.
yeah, see, one of the interesting things is that Lars von Trier apparently grew up in a very repressed Catholic household, I believe. And this film is sort of influenced in a way by that. And I can see that coming through a lot because this is such a repressed Catholic community. Like, as you've said, most of the characters, will have relations and friends within this community. And at one point, Bess is outcast. And she essentially just becomes like the scorn of the entire town. Like, nobody will talk to her, nobody will even kind of respect her, and she's become this kind of evil character in the eyes of the town. Even her father, I think, is it, like, refuses to turn up at her deathbed and like essentially banishes her to hell when she dies at the end. And it is sort of this kind of interesting attack on the, I guess, the problems that such a repressed Catholic kind of surrounding and environment can have on you. But then at the same time, I resent the fact that all the characters who break out of this, I mean, essentially the only character to break out of it is Bess, and she does so by being a slut and a whore, And I just feel so uncomfortable about Lars von Trier's actual message with this film. Like, and it's such a shame because it really lets down the fact that there is a lot of filmmaking in this that I really admire. Like, I do like the Dog May style. And there are elements of his kind of character development that I think are really interesting, but essentially it just ruins the whole thing for me.
The whole religion motif is something I find interesting. It's not something I particularly like, and it's actually something that I find quite a contradictory aspect coming from him, which I'll get to in a second. But I think it's kind of interesting that you have on one hand this very sort of organized religion, who obviously is somewhat oppressive to the small community, Who is forcing? I mean, they actually talk about religion at one point. There's one scene where the preacher talks about how if you don't love and obey the commandments, you're not welcome in God's house. So that kind of, on one hand, you know, let's say on the left hand shows this sort of very sterile, organized, strict religious order. Yeah, I kind of get the impression that, and I know this is going a little bit left field, but stay with it. But Bess might be a kind of symbolic reflection of Jesus. Because of her
Right.
self-sacrifice and because of her undying love towards Jan, and the fact that she will do anything for him, it seems to me almost like she's supposed to represent some kind of Masonic Messiah type character, which is good, and I find that interesting. But the metaphors and the references and the ideas put into it's not strong enough, and it doesn't work enough for me to kind of see past all the horrible sort of mean-spirited really nasty kind of undertones and essentially overtones throughout the film. It's just literally a film that's wrapped in real bleak darkness. Now, I like bleak films. I love bleak films. But I just kind of feel it needs a purpose, it needs a changing point, it needs a reason to be that. And I kind of find that this film is a story without reason. A lot of things happen simply to happen, which is an issue I have with von Trier, is that for so long I've seen him as someone that just does things because he can do them. And it irritates me to a point when people fawn over so much of his stuff, going, oh, it's ingenious because he does this. And the sort of critical acclaim that the idiots got, just to kind of spearhead off to the left a little bit, that kind of puzzles me, because that's actually really insulting, and it's a crude and it's an ugly film and it's horrible. Yet I've met people and I've talked to people and discussed this film with people who were like, oh, but it's an ingenious expression. It takes you to a place that you would never expect to go. And I was like, yeah, because you don't want to go there. And even if I did, at least give me a purpose to go there. Whereas I feel the idiots and this and a lot of von Trier films do not have a reason to go the places he does. But having said that, to get back to what I was on about with the sort of contradictory idea behind the religious thing, and to kind of tie into the idea of dogma film, which some people may know, some people may have no idea what it is, and they've heard, what's this dogma film that they keep talking about? Well, I believe back in 95, von Trier and someone else whose name completely escapes me now.
It's Thomas Vinterberg, I think.
Yes, that's the one. They came up with basically a aesthetic for filmmaking, a set r checklist of rules in which basically the purpose is to make the film feel as natural of an experience as possible. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, then you might know a bit more about it than me, but this is from what I remember. But it's basically to make the film experience as natural and as authentic and as, well, basically natural and as authentic as possible. So that means no additional lighting other than what is available. No additional technology used, like sound effects, visual effects, etc. There's a whole bunch of stuff, and the thing is, it is literally it's called dogma because it is a dogmatic list of rules to filmmaking. Like, you must obey these rules if you are going to be making films within this particular school of thought. And yet, von Trier has never really made any of his dogma films to the letter. He has always broken the rules. He's always gone against the rules that were set, the dogmatic list that was set. And his cop out for this was that if you confess the crimes you've made against the rules, then it's all right. And I kind of find that a little bit contradictory when he's bashing the church, an organized religion which has for years and years and years broke its own rules, but insisted that if you confess your sins, it's all right. And that kind of makes me a little mad. I mean, I'm not a church person, I'm not a religious person at all, and I think there's many statements you can make against organized religion. Just don't practice your own organized religion when you're punching the other one in the face. It's kind of like the equivalent of saying, oh, I hate slavery. Slavery is sickening. It's an abolishment on humankind. And I wrote an essay on it. And when I say I wrote an essay, I've got my house slave to write the essay.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel. I mean, I that opinion may completely differ to other people's, but that's how I feel anyway.
See, the thing is, for me, Lars von Trier is someone who likes to provoke. And I imagine Lars von Trier being this guy who is kind of sat at the back of the movie theater watching people be disgusted by his movie and kind of chuckling to himself. I think he has this kind of sadistic streak in him, and but he likes to make people feel uncomfortable and do things that he knows are going to upset people. I mean, this is the guy that made Antichrist, this is the guy that made Dogville, this is the guy that made The Idiots. And I kind of see that whole Dogmate movement as a kind of prank in a sense. That I mean, it's I totally think it's well intentioned as well. I think he did honestly want to make a film movement that was natural and authentic and kind of a counterpoint to the blockbusters that we were starting to see around the early 90s. But I also think that it's a kind of cinematic style that is essentially breaking the rules for the sense of breaking the just for the sake of breaking the rules, and doing it because he doesn't want to conform to like the conventional normal style of filmmaking. He's just doing it basically to take the piss out of people who are, you know, making these big special effects laden, huge budget blockbusters. And so I don't think it should be taken seriously, the whole Dogme thing. I mean, most of the rules he and Thomas Vinterberg have broken now, like at this point. I think maybe Festen and possibly The Idiots were the only two real Dogme films. I mean, Thomas Vinterberg's
Oh
now done things
no,
like Home to
The
Sabrina, which
Idiots
were
isn't.
totally normal.
I've read a list of
Like,
confessions from The Idiots, and it never fit into the Dogma rules. He had people replace actors for some of the sex scenes and stuff.
yeah, exactly. I mean, see, this is the thing that I don't think he's ever really taken it seriously. I think it's more just a prank, and
That irritates
that's
me
I
even
don't
more
know.
because the thing is, the intention is actually really good. The intention to kind of stick to natural filmmaking as authentic as possible and to kind of go against the grain and make something that is as organic as can be. I think that's actually really endearing and I think the intention is wonderful. But if you're just doing it for a laugh, it makes me dislike the man even more.
I know, and I think that's part of the point, to be honest with you. I mean, some of them, if you look through the Dogme list, some of them are pretty much, like, if you take a step back, I think some of them are a joke. Like, there's one which says you can only use items that you actually find at a set, you can't bring props. And that's pretty much impossible to do. Like, you can't make a serious movie just going to a park bench and being like, right, we've got to use what we have around here. There's
What's
some
in that
grass
bin?
and some
Have a
flowers
rattle
and some
through.
trees. Like, I honestly, I think it's half a joke, Lars von Trier, and I think that's just his nature, really.
And it is a shame because, you know, there is a decent spirit to the idea. And it just kind of makes me a little more sad that it's not. It's kind of like finding out Santa Claus isn't real, you know, because Santa Claus is a great idea, and then you find, you know, it was just a fable. Fuck you, Lars, and your fables.
I have a question for you, Mal. Do you
Yes.
think Bess and or Jan are mentally ill?
Yes.
Both of them,
Both.
or just one of them?
Both. I think without a shadow of a doubt, they're both mentally ill.
And like, from the film, mentally ill.
I think Bess starts off as mentally ill,
Okay.
and I think that's kind of proven all along because she, right from the get-go, she's weird. She's just, and I'm not, listen, I'm not sort of rubbishing mental illness as weird. I
No,
someone
no,
who
no, no, no,
has
no, no,
mental
no.
illness, so I can't exactly discriminate against my own. But I find her behavior very erratic right from the get-go, and it's almost as if she is she. The funny thing is, it's like she feels she can't operate on her own, but yet she manages to perfectly, to a degree. I mean, she can sort of orchestrate her own conversations with God, which I don't think anybody else can do. And it seems like there is a real streak of self-sufficiency in there. There's just part of her is fighting against herself, and it's almost split personality at points, I feel.
Just to interrupt there for a second, like, what makes you think that the conversations with God are just schizophrenia? I mean, it's kind of almost proven at the end that they are real in a way. I mean, she essentially kind of goes to heaven in the last scene of the film.
I suppose, but then again, you know, I don't know if that's intended or now if that is even a joke, if that's just a joke as if to say, you know, actually, this is the thing, I don't. fucking know what his intentions are with this film, and that's what kind of drives me crazy about it. I do certainly still think it's schizophrenia, despite the bells being up in the sky. The really bad CGI bells, I'm just going to stick another jab in. ring-a-ding-a-dinging in heaven. I think that's actually a really interesting point, but I don't know. I just get the sense that she is mentally unstable, and I think that her condition affects him. I think he's fine to begin with, but I think the onset trauma of his accident leads him to sort of form this very self-destructive path where he asks her to sleep with other men. This is not something he would normally do if he hadn't had the accident. This is something that he does because he feels like his life is all but destroyed. And I feel he says to her that he wants her to do it because it will make him feel loved and it will keep him alive. But I essentially think he's trying to kill himself.
Right.
Mentally.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is about Breaking the Waves, I don't really understand any of the intentions of any of the characters. I don't really understand. You see, there's so many contradictory things to it. Like, I am still not sure whether I think Bess is mentally ill or if she's just a really naive girl who has sort of had some emotional trauma in her life and can genuinely speak to God in this film.
I think it's interesting, and this is what I think was the purpose of picking this film, was that we're breaking opinions here, and we're dividing ideas. Honestly, I think I am convinced 100% she's mentally ill, because why would you do what she does at the end? Why would you go and essentially go into a situation where you know you're going to be raped? Who wants to be raped and beaten to death?
But I mean, she, in this kind of naive way, does think that she's helping Jan, and she has been told by her god that she is going to be helping Jan. And I mean, in a way, I guess Breaking the Waves is sort of an indictment of, you know, the lengths that people will go through what they're told by their religion. And like, essentially, I mean, this isn't very different from people who will, you know, commit certain acts because mm-hmm. they believe it's in the religious right to do it,
yeah.
because they think it's right in Christianity or Islam or anything, you know? I mean, it is an extreme act, and
yeah.
it's one that, I mean, most, I mean, 99.99% of the world would look upon and think is crazy. But she honestly believes that this is true because her God has told her so. I mean, I'm not saying that's the right answer. I think it's one open to debate.
Yeah.
But,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know.
That's the thing, this whole film is open to debate, and that's the one thing, although I really did not like the film, I like the fact that it's a film that encourages debate and leaves a lot open to discuss. And I think if the one clever thing, whether it was done on purpose or not, is the fact that he does make you consider if she is mentally ill or if she's just a victim of dogmatic religion, in the sense that she has become so endowed by the idea of religion and the connotation of what love means and to express it to its full fruition, that she kind of has become warped, or if it's just general madness. And I think that is kind of clever, whether or not it's done purposely or it just happens to be that. I don't know, but certainly, although I didn't like the film at all, I do like the fact that it leaves a lot to be discussed and a lot of ideas.
There's a line in the film that I think kind of sums up how I feel about this whole Bess thing. Well, not how I feel, but I think it sums up that whole kind of side of the argument. And I think it's when she's talking to Dr. Richardson and he says something to the effect of, just because you just show how you feel doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of hits the nail on the head in terms of that whole argument. I mean, just because she's the one person in this town who will go to the water and scream at the sea because she's missing her husband so much, does that necessarily make her mentally ill? And see, this is the reason why I chose Breaking the Waves, because as much as it's a film that I knew some people would hate, and you obviously do hate, I think it's a film that, you know, it's not very easy to describe why it's
yeah.
a film that people will have such an emotional reaction to, be it love or hate. I think it's one that you really need to dissect and analyze in order to get to your opinion, and that's what I hope I've achieved with choosing Breaking the Waves.
In a weird way, and I know this might not make sense, but it's not an easy film to hate in the sense that, for example, Transformers 2 is an easy film to hate because it's just downright shit. This is a film that's kind of hard to hate because it does pose a lot of questions, and I think no matter how you feel towards the film and how it's played out, the delivery of it and the actual content itself, I think if any film can actually make you think, make you pause, question motives, characters, if it can actually engage your brain to that degree, I think it deserves some credit. Even if you do hate it, it's not necessarily the easiest of films to hate, if that makes any sense
I think you've absolutely nailed why I picked this film right there. Yeah,
at
I
all.
totally agree with that.
Yeah.
Like I said, that there are so many aspects of this film that I really like. There are so many ideas. Like, one of the ones that I love is this kind of contrast between religion and sexuality. Like, I think that's a really interesting thing, theme in the film. There's this really subtle shot in the middle of Breaking Waves, and it's such a great moment, and it always stands out for me. And it's this, it's the scene that most people will miss if you've maybe just watched the film for the first time, but it's when she's having phone sex with Jan, and Bess says something along the lines of, "I want to touch you," and then looks kind of sheepishly over at the church. And I think that kind of reveals one of the main ideas in Breaking the Waves. And I think it's a really interesting moment in the film. And there are things like that that I love about Breaking the Waves, but then there's so much that we've discussed already that make me think, God, Lars von Trier, he's such an arrogant, cynical, miserable, hateful filmmaker.
Yeah, he certainly is that, but I mean, as much as I really dislike the guy, I have to give him a certain amount of credit for being able to provide discussion, provide debate with his films, whether he does these things just for that reason alone, and just does it to literally almost, in a sense, ironically play God with his audience, or he does it with a sort of greater meaning. He does it, whether the reason is tolerable or even likable, at all. It's there, and he is there, and that's the thing. He's one of those directors that will, I think, continuously do what he does, whether you like that or not.
Yeah, I pretty much agree. Like I said, I think he's, in my opinion, I think Lars von Trier is a prankster, and I think that he makes a film with the sole purpose of wanting to annoy people, and I think that's just him and his manic depressive, repressed ways. I mean, the next film he's making is what, The Nymphomaniac, which is essentially a film of real sex with Shia LaBeouf, and I kind of feel that kind of sums him up in a way, that this is the kind of person that he is. He will do this just to get a rise out of people. But then I kind of feel like his talent's wasted because there are moments of his films that are really inspired, and he always gets great performances out of his lead actors and actresses. And yeah, I'm still kind of on the fence with Breaking Away, so I don't really know how I feel about it.
It'd be interesting to know what you listeners think about it after having watched it. Perhaps you, like me, you've watched it for the first time. Perhaps, like Dan, you've watched it for like a multiple time, and in fact you have noticed stuff. I imagine it's a film that the more you watch it, the more you do pick up on stuff. If you can get through the full like 2.5 hours of it, you'll probably be able to find a lot more stuff. Because I never even picked up on that shot that you mentioned about her looking sheepishly at the church. But that's interesting. But I would love to know what your listeners have thought of Breaking the Waves, whether it's your first or second, third, fourth, or maybe even fifth, if you like the film that much viewing of it. There we go, Breaking the Waves. Controversial to say the least, in many ways. But no, I think it was a good choice. Although, like I said, although I didn't like the film, I'm glad that you picked it because the intentions in doing so were good. Don't worry, Dan. I don't hold it against you.
I feel kind of bad. I was just saying before
No,
the show,
don't.
Jamal, I feel bad because I chose a film that I knew a lot of people would hate. I'm sure there are people sat here right now thinking, "You're such a sadist. Why'd you put me through this?" And I didn't mean that. I just wanted to get a good debate going. So if you have some really strong thoughts on the film, please get in touch with us over at the Screen Invasion forums, Facebook. Just type in Screen Invasion, you can find them. And get in touch with us on Twitter at Invasion Radio and let us know how strongly you feel about this
Have
film.
At it, like hungry dogs, as it were. So there we go. That is our feature presentation. And we're going to move into what we call Trash Bag Masterpiece, which I must admit I came ill-prepared for this, but I think I found something that is pretty fitting of the bill, of something that is so horrendous you wouldn't want to watch it again alongside Breaking the Waves. I'm joking. But the film that I'm picking for Trash Bag Masterpiece is a film starring Monique, who you may know as Oscar winner from Precious, or what was its full length title? It was something totally ridiculous, like Precious.
Precious.
Based on the based novel on Push the by Sapphire.
No, wait, what? Precious based on the novel something.
It's
Push by
yeah.
Sapphire.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's the one. In which she was actually fantastic. And if you've seen the film, she gave a fantastic performance and totally deserved that Oscar. However, I don't think she deserves the Oscar for her role in Fat Girls. And that's Fat, PH Fat. You know, like how it was cool in like 98 when Fred Durst was flipping his cap backwards and flipping the burn to the man saying, yo, I'm so fat, I'll break your TV screens, biatch. Well, it's that kind of fat. In the title, but it deals with fat girls, F-A-T, it basically deals with bigger sized ladies. The plot description on IMDb is as follows. Two plus size ladies meet the men of their dreams in the most unexpected of ways. Now, I'm just going to give you a spoiler. The most unexpected way is that they win a holiday to Palm Springs and they meet them in the swimming pool. That is the most unexpected thing that this writer could come up with. It is just horrendous. I've watched the trailer for it. It features Monique, as I said, some other people, and it's just utterly ghetto-licious in the worst, most offensive way to African-Americans, I think, is possibly the best way to say it. It's just... that's the best way to describe it, I think, is just that big, audible sigh. Just the dialogue, the way it looks, the acting is horrendous. I've got a couple of quotes for you here. And it's mainly from Monique's character, who is called Jasmine Biltmore. Which, I don't know, is that surname a sort of really bad pun? That she's built more than other ladies?
I don't know, that's interesting.
Here's some choice quotes for you from the film just to kind of gauge an idea of how bad it is. Of course, you can see the trailer. I'll put the trailer up in the show notes at screeninvasion.com. But just drop in some quotes for you. Holy God, I'm as fat as Jesus' wife, Lorenda.
What?
Yep. Don't know. Don't know who Lorenda is. Let's have a look. There was something. There's a restaurant in it called Fat Ass Burger. Fat Ass.
Is it spelled P H or F?
It's F. It should have been P H because that's how you get the youth demographic. You know, you don't even have to spend that much on advertising if you're calling yourself Fat Ass Burger with a P H. Kids will be those burgers are fat ass. Anyway, another quote for you is, you're so ugly, your birth certificate is an apology letter from the condom factory.
This film has sass.
This is it. It should be called Sass Fat Girls.
Sass Girls.
Yeah. I am fatabulous, and that's spelt with a PH, obviously, because if you're going to combine words and make new ones that sound utterly ridiculous, you want to take utterly ridiculous spellings to do that. I am fatabulous, and I ain't fat, I'm sexy succulent.
Well, at least, I mean, on a positive note, at least they don't have a, like, delusional, like, idea of what they appear like. At least they're happy to admit that they're fat.
That's true. A step. It's quite literally putting them on Front Street and going, this is me. I mean, the thing is, there's probably a positive message in there somewhere.
It's good to feel good about yourself.
Exactly.
No matter what your weight. That's a nice message.
But just... don't cover that message with like 90 minutes of horseshit, you know, because otherwise that's going to be hard to actually dig through and find that message. And when you do, you probably won't give a shit anymore because you'll be covered in horse muck and smell. So Yeah, Fat Girls, check out the trailer, and I will of course put the link to the IMDb B page, P, so you can go and check out some of the quotes yourself as well if you want, or maybe even, I know, peruse the films some more if you want to, you crazy gluttons for punishment. But yeah, so there we go. The next bit of business, of course, finishing up, the next bit of business is to take my pick, my
I'm so
next pick.
excited. I'm really looking forward to this because I have a feeling you could try and get back at me for breaking my
Oh
rules.
no, not yet. That will wait.
Oh God.
I need sufficient time to rake through the annals of cinematic history to find something for you, Mr. Seraph. But no, what I wanted to do is kind of going on the contingency of that we have picked a lot of films that both of us obviously enjoy, that a lot of people enjoy. I wanted to pick something that perhaps some people may not have seen. I wanted to pick something that was a piece of British cinema because I felt we've not actually. I don't know if you would class Breaking the Waves as British because I know it's filmed in Scotland and set in Scotland, but I don't know if you would technically class it as a bit of British cinema with it being done by old Lazy Boy. But I wanted to pick something that was definitely, undoubtedly, a piece of British cinema, something that wasn't particularly as well known, and something that I actually didn't like the first time I watched it, and I've only watched it once. I didn't like it. Everybody else I knew loved it, and it puzzled me as to why, because I kind of found the film a little bit empty. But thinking about it now, maybe it's time to go back and check it out, look at it through a different prism, and maybe I might see what everyone else saw when they first watched Fish Tank in 2009.
Ooh, very good choice. I've only seen the film once and I really enjoyed it, but I actually had a little discussion with someone about it the other week, strangely enough, and they hated the film and they gave me this big long list of reasons why they didn't like it. And I was like, yeah, I never really thought about that. So it'll be interesting to go back and check out Fish Tank and see if it holds up on a second viewing.
Well, I'm interested because, like I said, I think it's obviously a film that at the time a lot of people seemed to like, and I didn't like it. And sometimes, on the rare occasion, I am wrong. I know, it's not often, but sometimes that does sneak in. But I kind of felt, well, let's go back, check it out. And of course, I said I wanted something that was British, and it is kind of quintessentially British, as it's filmed on a council estate, which kind of gives perhaps people who don't live in this country a better idea of what that sect of life over here is like, if your only reference for that kind of world is Attack the Block, which obviously isn't that realistic, hence with all the aliens running around. But I just thought it'd be an interesting pick for something that was a little bit contemporary, a little bit British, and something that I had very divided opinions on. And yeah, so there you go, Fish Tank from 2009, directed by Andrea Arnold, written by Andrea Arnold. Starring Kate Jarvis, Mr. Michael Fassbender, who of course has gone on to do some amazing things since. And just a quick IMDb description for you, for those who are not initiated with the film at all. Everything changes for 15-year-old Mia when her mum brings home a
You
new.
got sassy there.
I
You
know,
were
when
trying
her
to fat
mum bring
girls.
home a new boyfriend. I've been watching too much Fat Girls. That's what it is. Everything go to shit when Mia's life changes. Yeah, so there you go, that's Fish Tank. Should be interesting. Let us know what you
That's a real
think.
last choice. Like a choice. I've really done a bit of a curveball there. I wasn't expecting that one at all.
See? I have a few sneak moves up my sleeve, sir. I have a few sneak moves. So there you go, that is Fish Tank. I mean, it should be able to track it down pretty easy. And as I said before, as we do with each episode, I'll put in the IMDb link and what have you in the show notes at screeninvasion.com. But I think on that note, that's pretty much it for Film Club this week. Unless you've got anything you want to add, sir, that we perhaps have missed.
No, I'm good. I think it's I'm looking forward to Fish Tank. That's all I'm doing right now.
And you should too. So go get yourself a copy, and of course, make sure to check us out on screeninvasion.com as well. But you can join in the conversation if you have so much that you just want to offload about Breaking the Waves, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. Please make sure to head over to facebook.com and look for Screen Invasion, and you can find the film forums at the top of the page there. Jump in and give your two cents on the film. And of course, you know, after this, it's going to be the public pick again as well. So if you've got a film that you would like us to tackle, throw in your suggestions into the hat there as well. Other than that, go watch the film, enjoy, discuss, and we shall see you in 2 weeks' time, dear listeners.